And welcome to Generations. This is our program. I'm Kevin. Dave's over there. And this is Kevin Swanson, Executive Director for Christian Home Educators. But the reason we're on this program, we homeschool our children out here on the Eastern Plains of Colorado, and trying to bring back some concepts in a lost and lonely world. We happen to believe that modern man is lost and lonely. He's given up on the notion of absolute truth and relationships. Therefore, he is lost and lonely. And we're trying to recover relational living. And one of the ways we're doing it, as you know, Dave, is we homeschool, which means we live with our children all day long. My children are in the house with me right now. We work with our children. We educate our own children ourselves. We live together. We don't put our children in boxes and institutions. We live in covenantal relationship with our children. We're trying to renew this concept in this institutionalized world, which has basically institutionalized people from womb to tomb, whether it be in the public schools, in the K-12 schools, in the universities, in the corporate life, in the cubicle, in the wherever you happen to be, shuffled off to in your churches, in your clubs, in your communities. Modern life is a lonely life. And Dave, as you know, there are far, far, far more people living all by themselves today than there was in 1950. I think it's an increase of 5 to 6 times the people living by themselves since 1950. So the modern world is vastly, vastly, vastly more lonely than it was in the 1950s or the 1880s for that matter. But Dave, this is affecting the church as well. And one of the ways it affects the church is in the area of transiency. And I want to talk about transiency just a little bit. And then we're going to go to roots on the program today and how important roots are to establish community over a long period of time. But Dave, just recent surveys from George Barna is giving us that 1 in 7 individuals change churches every year. And Dave, I really relate to this kind of thing, because I look back at our particular church, which has been going for about 7 years, and Dave, you've been part of us for 6 to 7 years yourself, and I looked at the number of people that are still with us that were with us for the first 2 years of the church and found that 55% of the membership from year 1 and 2 are gone by year 7. Again, that's 55% are gone by year 7. Now, another church that I'm familiar with in the Denver metro area, again, this is the big city life, not necessarily the smaller areas, smaller cities, but another church out in the Denver metro area has been around for about 20 years. They've got 4 members left after about 20 years. 4 out of the original 60 are left after 20 years. Now, that's about, what is that, about 92% decline after 20 years, which means, effectively, you're getting a brand new church about every 20 years.
Well, that means that whatever you're doing, you're not having a lasting effect.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no lasting impact. There's no lasting impact. Whatever you start today will be gone in 20 years. It'll be something different, completely different.
Now my guess is most of those people haven't left the church not to ever attend another church, but they've left one church in order to attend a different church because they're viewing the church as a consumer. Now, they may have been transferred or moved the land, but there is nothing about that church that makes them want to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the reason that they move, I mean, it's all over the map. Sometimes they move because, you know, their corporation moves them. And you know, I would guess, Dave, that 90% of the people you talk to in the Denver metro area will tell you they're not here to stay. 90%. I'll bet you anything, 90%. You walk up to 90% of people in the Denver metro area right now in the year 2008, and you ask them, do you plan to stay here indefinitely? Are you committed to staying in the Denver metro area and putting your roots down in this modern city life and not moving from this land for indefinitely, maybe even for generations? 90%, maybe 95%, maybe 98% would say, no way, man, roots, you got to be kidding me. I have no roots. I'm as transient as the day is long. If I get a better job in Atlanta, I'm there overnight, baby.
Well, so many in the Denver area came here from California. They didn't like the way California was, but they're bringing the same problems here. So they'll go somewhere else and try and escape that. Denver has, for a long time, been a town of transients, a town that imports labor, that imports people, because there is a reasonably high quality of living here in terms of the way people view that. But, you know, the commitment to the institutions, the commitment to the land, the commitment to raise their children here, it's not been a part of Colorado in a long time.
And, Dave, I think one of the consequences of this is that relationships become incredibly weak and shallow. I mean, you know what, Dave? And relationships just just are skin deep anymore. And I think about my own life, Dave. I lived in California for 10 years myself. And you know what? We have lost touch with, I think, just about every single friend from California, except maybe two. We have, I think, two people in California that still write to us and send a Christmas card occasionally. I worked in a corporation for 7 years there. I don't even remember a single person I worked with. I don't know them. I don't write to them. I was with them, Dave. 7 years I was with them. 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours a week I was with them. You know, how many hours is that? 18,000 hours I'm with these people? And, Dave, I don't know a single one of them today. Shows you how shallow these relationships are. I lived in Japan for 11 years. And, you know, I've reached out to one of my old friends, one or two. I mean, not very many, but, and even in that case, there's very little interest on his part. And overall, just relationships fade away while you move from state to state and country to country and city to city and neighborhood to neighborhood. And I look around this neighborhood, Dave, and, you know, most of the, I'd say at least half of the people that were here when we moved in, some, was it 10, 12 years ago, they're gone today. They're gone. Now, there's a couple of neighbors. There's, I think, one or two neighbors. Yeah, there's only two neighbors that we've gotten to know really well, and they've been here all 12 years, and we're pretty close with them today. And, you know, I mean, we're pretty close, and we're ministering the gospel to them. I think we're going to break through with them, and it's wonderful. I mean, these relationships are beginning to solidify with these neighbors, but most of them would not form a relationship with you because they knew you were going to move out within 4 years. They knew you were going to be gone. So why establish any close relationship when you know that person's going to be out of your life in 4 to 5 years? So, see, modern life, even out here in the country, is very, very transient and very, very shallow in terms of their relationships.
That kindness that you showed to your neighbor, neighborliness we used to call it, that's sort of self-defeating because your neighbor's not going to be there very long. You know, my father was raised on the mission field, and then when I was very young, he was working for a large corporation that moved him around a lot. We didn't stay very many years, too many places. So every time we'd pick up and move, we'd have to find some new friends, and we'd pick up and move again, and there'd be new friends. And this, when I'm very young, this is making a large impression. This is how the world is. Now, I was from a fairly large family, five children in the family, so that was constant. That was the only thing that was constant. But that transiency of relationships, then I look to this day and I say, I don't make deep relationships very quickly. I'm very slow about going deep. And I think it's probably because we moved around so much.
Yeah. All right, folks, in just a moment, I want to talk about what the Bible says about this. We take this from a biblical worldview, as we take everything from a biblical worldview. So we ask the question, WDBSAT, what does the Bible say about that? And we're going to talk about roots, transiency, and long-term relationships in just a moment on this program. Stay with me. This is Generations.
With literacy rates falling and American schools approaching third world nation status in math and science, parents everywhere are concerned, and they're getting involved. That's why tens of thousands of families across the state of Colorado have turned to home education. For over 20 years, Christian Home Educators of Colorado has hosted an annual conference designed to encourage and inspire families anywhere along the path, from beginners to veteran homeschoolers. Throughout the year, they offer special introductory seminars, retreats, graduations, a news magazine, and a satellite school to aid in the required record keeping. CHECK also offers a bookstore complete with the best resources, tapes, and curriculum, all of which has been carefully chosen to equip and supplement your homeschool program. To learn more about CHECK, visit their website at chec.org.
To a lost and lonely world, my friends, this is Kevin Swanson, and we want to bring relationships and truth back because, hey, the modern world is lost and lonely, and we have been largely without relationships in family and community in the modern world for the last, at least a century, multiple generations. And one of the problems, one of the manifestations of this sort of thing is the increase, the massive increase of transiency. People don't have roots much anymore. And I'd like to present this as effectively an evil. Again, let's be very careful. It's not wrong to move. Not wrong at all. Not wrong to move from one place to another. And it's not wrong to be a missionary and put down roots in a new place and establish the Church of Christ in some particular area. Not wrong to do any of that. However, Ultimately, what the Word of God brings out is that this is an evil, like debt is an evil. Debt isn't a sin necessarily, but it's an evil. That is, it's like the measles. It's something that really, when it happens, it's a negative. It's a way in which we live life less at a lower level than God's ultimate for us as people, as those who ought to live according to God's standard. Well, you see this throughout the Bible, all the way back to Proverbs 27, verse 8, as a bird that wanders from her nest, so is a man that wanders from his place. And one of the curses God places upon his people in Deuteronomy 28, if they refuse to obey him and walk in his ways, is that Yahweh is going to scatter you among all the people from one end of the earth to the other. And among those nations you will find no ease, neither shall the sole of your foot find rest. In other words, a curse is that you won't be able to put down roots anywhere. You'll be moving from place to place, and you will never really find any place that you could call home. And Dave, you remember that Abraham began with that particular situation. He was a wanderer. He wandered into the Canaan, but yet God promised that land to him. He says, I will give unto you and to your seed after you the land wherein you are now a stranger, all the land of Canaan for an everlasting possession. So he's saying, you know, I'm going to give you a place where you can put your roots down. And then later on in Numbers 14:33, when you remember the children of Israel, they were bad. They were really bad. They were faithless and they turned against God in terms of taking the promised land. And God cursed them there. Your children shall wander the wilderness for 40 years and bury your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. So there it is. You're gonna be buried, you know, out in the wilderness somewhere as you're traveling around. You will have no roots. And that's a cursed state, to be for 40 years wandering without a place to really call home.
Well, you go back even further. Adam and Eve had to wander away from the garden. They no longer had that home. Cain was sentenced to wandering the earth.
Yeah.
You think about just the laws about land and people. Don't remove the property stone boundaries, the boundaries that mark the property. That the land was so important. When the Israelites took over the land, parceling out that land was about the most important thing could happen. Passing that land on from father to son to grandson to great-grandson, even, and sometimes daughters if there was no son to take the land. This was a very important thing. The land was a sign, a symbol of who the people were. We say that I'm German. Why? Because my ancestors lived in this place, a land called Germany.
Yeah. Now, ultimately, I think it's a blessing when God allows you to spend some time in a particular area to the point where you can get your roots down and your children and your grandchildren will be the inheritors of that particular land. Well, also in Matthew 25:44, Jesus talks about, you know, those people that were persecuted and in trouble. He says, then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we you hungry, athirst, a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, etc., etc.? To be a stranger in the land is like being in prison, Dave. It's a bad situation, and people don't, I think, understand this, that when corporations move them from place to place to place, and even the military will do this to people, you know, they'll be in a particular place for 3 years, and then the military will up and move them to another place, to another place. This is like being a prisoner. This is like being in prison or hungry or thirsty. This is a cursed state to be in. It's an evil thing. And, you know, it happens to people who are persecuted. You think of Acts 11:19, the diaspora or the dispersion that occurred in the early church, and it happened on persecution. The church was scattered abroad because of the persecution. That's Acts 11 and verse 19. And also 1 Peter is written to the strangers scattered throughout Asia Minor. So this happened. You see, they had the dispersion in the Acts, and 1 Peter is written to these guys who are scattered. I mean, for the last 20, 30 years, evidently these people were scattered throughout Asia Minor, and they were uprooted from their homeland, from the place where they lived, and they were scattered all over the place. And Peter says, you're going to endure this time of trial and persecution. And then he reminds them that they have an inheritance reserved in heaven for them, because, you know, they don't have an inheritance. They don't have land right here that they inherit themselves. So, you know, effectively what we have is a situation where I think even today we have a lot of people who are uprooted constantly. And you can be uprooted by a lot of things. Famine would be one example. I mean, you lose your job in one particular area, and there is no work for you there. You have to go somewhere else. And this happened to certainly Jacob and his sons. Remember, they went down to Egypt for a while. It also happened to Naomi in the book of Ruth, where Naomi and her family and the two sons went out to Moab, and they were strangers in the land of Moab for a while. And it was very, very, you know, horrible situation for them. And in fact, she calls herself, you know, somebody who's very bitter. Call me a bitter person from now on, because she not only was uprooted but lost her husband and her two sons there as well.
Well, we see when people are in exile nationally on the stage right now, think of the Palestinians. They're very angry. They lost some of that land. They're no longer there. I think part of the evil of being uprooted and being moved or not being able to set roots in either case is that you don't build a culture. You don't get to make a legacy in that area. People don't develop the land because they're not going to stay on the land, but they don't develop a culture in that area. In other words, the people in the churches in Colorado haven't had a big effect because the people have just gone and moved to Wyoming and California and Texas and everywhere else. Why bother to change society here when I'm just going to be off somewhere else? See,
sure.
when you're planted, you're going to change that environment. You're going to have an effect, a long-term effect on the culture, on the land, on the economics, on everything. But if you up and go, what's the point?
Sure, exactly. And I think that happens to a lot of places. You establish a church. You establish a community. You want to make an impact on the politics of that community. I tell you what, if that pastor ups and moves, and if 95% of his congregants are gone within 15 years, you're not going to make any impact on that land. You got to be kidding me. You're not going to make any impact on that land. If you're going to really inherit the earth, if you're really going to make an impact on any particular community, you have to really put your roots down. You actually have to have some people who put their roots down. And that's, I believe, the way that the meek will inherit the earth.
And Kevin, you have to give that same vision for the land to your children. Because if it's interrupted after one generation, you haven't accomplished anything.
And Dave, you know, it's transience that is always driven by, I think, the corporate world. You know, you get a recession that hits or depression that hits, and it can be a very tough time and a time of great uprooting in that particular area. And in the end, people have a hard time really laying out these close-knit relationships. I mean, think about it. If you just are in a community for a short period of time, you're not going to commit yourself to anybody. You're not going to commit yourself to a church. You're not going to commit yourself as true friends to the neighbors that are around you. You're going to be gone within, you know, 5 to 10 years. So why do you care?
You know, that's not true everywhere. I remember going to my grandmother's funeral. She's a very small town in Nebraska. The very same church that my parents were married at, my grandmother had been going there for some 50 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
really.
People knew her when she was young. You're talking about my grandmother now. And so there was a culture, there was a society, there was a civilization there that was built by people who had labored for 40 and 50 years. I think of the churches in Scotland. I mean, when you go build a church that you're going to think is going to last and it's going to serve generations, if you're going to make a structure that's not just some tin Quonset hut, but something worthy of the gospel, you want it to last for 100, 200, 400 years.
Well, that's exactly what Jesus said when he says you will be persecuted, and you need to be willing to leave everything. You need to be willing to leave your father, your mother, your brothers, your sisters, your lands for me. But then he says, if you do that, I am going to give you more, you know, 100 times more mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and lands with persecution. He said, you're never going to be without persecution, so relax, man. You know, you're going to have some persecutions, and it's not going to be easy to establish rule and dominion and be sanctified and sanctify the institutions, whether it be your marriage or your economics or your politics or whatever it is in the land where you live. But he does say that you're going to be persecuted, and you may have to leave a certain land, but you can replant yourself somewhere, and when you do, you can establish lands for yourself and hopefully make an impact and take dominion for Christ in that new land. And David, you think about it, that's pretty much what happened to this country. You know, a lot of people were uprooted from Scotland and England and Holland and other places where they were terribly persecuted, and they came to America, and they put their roots down, and they established a nation. It was a godly nation with great heritage. And it happened because they were willing to give everything up for Christ, and then they planted a wonderful nation based on the principles of God's Word right here in America. And you know what? I think we have to be willing to do that too. But the ultimate goal is really, number one, well, there's two ultimate goals. Number one, the ultimate goal is to get your roots down somewhere right here and really dig in and establish something right here where we are. And then secondly, our ultimate goal is to inherit heaven, which is the inheritance Peter talks about.
Yeah, it's to take the land here, to take dominion of that, and then to look forward to inheritance in heaven. To take the land here, you're going to have a vision. You're going to have to pass it on to your children. We think about the Pilgrims. We think about the founding of this country when John Winthrop and Richard Hooker said to a guy named Richard Mather, why don't you come over and help us build a city on a hill? And Richard Mather, an important preacher, but more importantly, a father who had a son, Increase Mather, an important preacher, an important president of the university, an important author. But more importantly, he was a father of a guy named Cotton Mather, you know, who had, I think, 17 children, if I recall right. This was the founding family, essentially, of America. And then Samuel Mather, who writes Cotton Mather's biography, there's four generations. Yeah. There's four generations establishing Boston. Four generations. You don't have four generations in Colorado, except for maybe, I think, like there was two families and one of them moved.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And Dave, those are roots. Those Mathers had roots, and they established a nation. They established a nation because they put roots down, and they were willing to hang in there generation after generation after generation after generation and not move, you know, off to Australia and then off to New Zealand and then off to somewhere else. They were willing to build right here. And, folks, I think it's important to build community and to sink roots into your community. And, Dave, let's talk about ways to do that. I think the first thing you have to do is embrace relational living. That is small communities where people really know each other, and you're not getting lost in the shuffle, and there's not anonymity here like a lot of people have. I think we need to be small enough so we know each other. We know each other for long periods of time. It's important, I think, to be diversified as well. You know, if recession hits or depression hits, and you've got a guy working in some big corporation in some little narrow job on the 15th floor in some little cubicle, and all he does is this tiny little defined job where he moves paper from here to here to so forth, you know what? He's going to have to move somewhere else, way across the country, in order to do that identical job. So you got to be careful that you aren't being so narrowly defined in what you do in life. And that's what corporate life tends to do for you. It narrowly defines you, and you're not really able to do, you know, a broader spectrum of things. And so when a recession hits or something like that, you have a hard time really making it work in that particular community. And I think the important thing is to diversify a little bit. And you know what? Even if you have a home business on the side, maybe that home business could really kick in during the recession.
Yeah, and that's not going to be possible for everyone. There'll be people in the military who won't be able to lay roots down right away, who won't be able to diversify their income because of other factors in their life. But they should be working towards this. They should be thinking about this. How are they going to set it down? I would say one of the most important things is commit to a group of sinners called a church.
Yeah. We'll take care of you.
And hang with them through thick and thin to really honor the unity of the body, to really seek that. And the bond of peace, which means that you're going to have to learn to forgive, and you're going to have to learn to love, and you're going to have to become a community, warts and all.
Yeah, exactly. And establish those long-term relationships and be willing to work through those conflicts, as Dave said. Be willing to work through those conflicts. Now, you got to be careful not to get too close too fast. I think, sometimes familiarity will breed contempt, and you got to be careful. You got to develop honorable, respectful relationships over a long period of time. And be willing to hang in there for a long time and handle those relationships with wisdom and love. And just hang in there. And Dave, I think the other thing is sometimes we really have to be willing to take care of each other. You know, if somebody has a hard time really making it for a period of time, you help each other so your brothers don't have to move out of the area to get another job. Maybe you can employ them in your field for a little while. And if you're debt-free, you know, to be debt-free usually enables you to take on a little lower pay for a period of time while the recession works its way out. And so, again, I think you can ride some of those waves if you have some savings and if you're debt-free. So these are the sorts of things that would establish community when people are in debt. And when they're in the corporate job and they're not diversified and they don't really commit with the relationships in the local body of believers, et cetera, et cetera, of course they're going to be transient. Of course they're going to be like the gypsies, moving from place to place to place to place. So let's do the things that it's going to take to reestablish community and relationships in the modern world. And I think we can establish relational living if we have a heart for it. Maybe that's what we're trying to say on this program today. Now, one of the things you might get a hold of is my book, The Second Mayflower. I talk about a vision for this sort of life in reestablishing a movement in communities across America that would represent the principles upon which this nation was founded. But it's going to happen over what I call a generational vision, over a time of generations. We got to commit to this over the long haul, folks. And I talk about that in my book, The Second Mayflower. You can pick up a copy of that book by just calling 877-842-CHECK. Again, a copy of the Second Mayflower at 877-842-CHECK. Or just go to our website, kevinswanson.com, and the Second Mayflower is right there on the front page. Folks, you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. Tune in anytime, right there, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, and I want to invite you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.